Gathered around the table, and we were trying to figure out the story to tell to introduce Chris. During the conversation, Chris and I had a conversation about the sermon that she was going to give. I had said that the title of the sermon, and I had transposed the first two words, resulting in the question, is it possible? Well, as you can see, with Chris at my side, and Chris was quick to respond and make the proclamation, it is possible. Reveals much about Chris, for she lives the question. She struggles with the question, and she stays with the question long enough to transform it into a proclamation. By doing so, Chris lives out her vocation as preacher on a day-to-day basis. We are truly gifted to have her here today to preach and proclaim with us.
Stand, please. Thank you. we lift other prayers for the world.
Those vocals, even those that are deep within the crevices of our hearts, we ask now that you take all of our prayers, bring them together with your wisdom and your power, in your anointing. Bind us together this day, helping us to realize that yes, we are different, but we are not so different. Unite us. Empower us to name the differences, and celebrating our unity in you. We pray this prayer in the unity of oneness. For the reading of the gospel. Our gospel reading this morning is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 15. And Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and shouted, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David.
My daughter is severely possessed by a demon.
But Jesus did not answer her a word. And the disciples came and begged Jesus, saying, "Send her away, for she is shouting after us." Jesus answered,
"I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel."
But she came and knelt before Jesus, saying,
"Oh Lord, help me."
And Jesus answered her,
"But it's not fair to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs."
But she responded to Jesus,
"Yes, my Lord. Yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their owner's table."
Then Jesus answered her,
"O woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire."
And her daughter was healed instantly. In Isaiah 55, the prophet proclaims for us,
"Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters.
Anyone who has money, come buy and eat.
Come buy wine and milk without money and without price."
You may be seated.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Is not on? I'm sorry? Louder, please. I want to make a statement before I preach. So here are the opening words of this statement, and then the sermon will follow. We come to this moment carrying many things: joys, struggles, exhaustion, challenge, silence, anger, exhilaration. We also come hoping for the future, for future days and future events that will move our struggle along, for times in the future when we will hear more fully and understand the stories, the theological insights, the life experiences of women with disabilities, for a time to hear more about the worldview, the sacred symbols, the traditions of Native American women, for a time to hear more and more white women speak about the structures, the tyranny, the terrain of white supremacy and white racism, for times when our older sisters will speak about their experience of ageism and all its marginalization. More from African American women, more from Asian women, more from Hispanic, Latino women, more from lesbian women, from silenced women, more. We need more. And there will be a day, there will be more. Now, a personal note, and then I'll begin. In 1987, I stood in a conference of gathered United Methodist clergywomen on a platform not unlike this one. I was one of five voices that read several anonymous statements written by lesbian clergywomen in attendance at the conference and their feelings of being silenced, oppressed, afraid. I read those statements anonymously as well. This day, I stand before you having come a very, very long way since then. This day, I share this sermon with you as a United Church of Christ pastor and as a lesbian clergywoman. I wish I could stand before you this day and tell you how inspiring I think this story of the Canaanite woman is. Her strong presence, her persistent faith, her shameless audacity. I'd like to be able to feel the full weight of joy as I experience this ancient story retold, celebrating her daughter's healing, smugly as a woman rejoicing in the truth, that this woman seems to expand Jesus' ministry, his self-understanding and worldview as none other seems to. Completely and thoroughly awed by the clarity of her mission. But as much as I can appreciate and celebrate this woman, I cannot celebrate this story. It's too filled with inequity, with dismissal, with demeaning power, with dehumanization for me to be able to feel any real comfort or ease with it. It's so much easier to speak about her bold voice than to sense the silent rejection of both Jesus and the disciples. It is so much more comforting to recognize her quick and persuasive insight than to feel this woman's kneeling. It is so much more uplifting and empowering to respect the faith of this woman to bring about the healing of her own daughter than to acknowledge that this woman ultimately had to beg. I've always found this story angering and offensive. The silencing of women's voices is oppressive. The dismissing of women's lived experience is dehumanizing. Forcing women to beg for the resources, power, healing, care they need in order to sustain life for themselves and their children is always an act of violence. Perhaps some of us, not all of us, some of us spiritualize the Canaanite woman's interaction with Jesus because it is less terrifying for us to encounter this narrative as one of faith and hope than to face this woman's story as one of violence and survival. Great is her faith, and great the oppression. Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the water, and you that have no money, come, buy and eat, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. I fear that this woman is like so many women throughout ages a courageous survivor, a powerful moral agent who is determined to find water, wine, and milk, and does, yet with great cost and at a very high price. The commentators idealize her, saying she shocks, shames, and charms us to imitate her bold and persistent faith. Maybe this woman doesn't want to shock or charm or shame anyone. Perhaps this woman simply wants access to those things that make for fullness of life. Perhaps she wants the marginalization of her daughter to stop. Perhaps she wants her ethnicity to be respected and honored. Perhaps she wants men to treat her with full human regard. I've often wondered, and I invite us all to wonder, what this woman might have been saying to her friends as she leaves this scene, having shouted for help and initially been totally ignored, having knelt down on her knees before this powerful man, and having spoken the words, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Crumbs are a far cry from abundant water, wine, and milk without price. Last May, I was in Guatemala with two of my colleagues from United Seminary. We were sitting in a small open-air restaurant one evening in Chichicastenango, reflecting on our day. It was dusk. People were putting away the last visible signs of the market. While we were keenly absorbed in our conversation, a small boy, maybe 6 or 7, came up to me and started tugging at my shirt sleeve, asking me for money. I ignored him for a while, and then finally I said in my blunt and unpolished Spanish, "No es posible," it is not possible. He kept tugging, and I repeated at least twice more, "No es posible, no es posible." And then I looked him in the eye, and he engaged me squarely back, and he simply said, "Es posible." It is possible. I was totally undone. I reached in my pocket, gave him some money. He was quickly on his way. Change from the pockets of the rich must feel like crumbs. It is surely not water, wine, milk at no price. There's something frighteningly similar about these two stories. If we want to be casually inspired by them, we will speak about the faith of this bold Canaanite woman and the persistence of this small Guatemalan child. If we want to be changed by them, we will speak about the poverty, the racism, the power, the need, the oppression that forces most of the people of our globe to beg for food, for human dignity, for equal honoring, for life. Realities of many of our lives force many others to beg for what is needed. I can't help wondering if Jesus felt this horrible truth as much as I did that evening in Chichicastenango. This small Guatemalan boy has been teaching me for months now that there is a vast difference between what we are able to do and what we are unwilling to do. It would have been far more honest to have said, "I do not want to share my money with you. I am not willing to share my money with you. But what I spoke was an illusion and a lie. The truth was never that I was not able. The truth was never that it was not possible." Reimagining is about discerning and celebrating what is possible. The possibility of a world where no one has the power to dismiss, where no one sits while others kneel, while no community eats exclusively from the table. It is about the possibility of a world where all people have dignity, where resources of life are distributed equitably, where all people have access to what is on the table and there are no more crumbs. It is about water running freely, wine poured out extravagantly, milk flowing endlessly. Reimagining is about discovering what we can create and shape together. It is about holding one another accountable in every conceivable way with the words and the praxis, es posible, es posible. But even to say these words is too easy. The work of reimagining is not the same for each one of us. For some of us, it will be the work of channeling our influence. For others of us, it will be work that will literally save the lives of our family members. For some of us, we will be compelled to relinquish privilege. Others of us will feel forced to pick up guns to defend our villages. It's all important work, but it should be shocking and confronting the differences in urgency, need, and survival. The songs, the poetry, the art, the verse that emerge from the lived realities of our lives and our work reveal in a particularly poignant way these places of great difference. In a song entitled Cradle of Dawn, Libby Rodrick sings to a person halfway around the world about the struggle they both are engaged in for justice. At one point she sings, "The forces facing us are terrible indeed. My hope may flicker in the night, but in the morning I will plant another seed, and while you sleep, it seeks the light. There are no promises that we will see the day the dreams we live for will succeed, but I can promise you that halfway round the world, I'll hold the light up while you sleep." Having been moved by this song the past few years, sung by a compassionate Anglo woman, it is painful and confrontive to put this song alongside Julia Esquivel's poem printed in your program book. We were going to read it on Thursday night. It's there. Hear her words. "I am no longer afraid of death. I know well its dark and cold corridors leading to life. I am afraid rather of that life which does not come out of death, which cramps our hands and retards our march. I am afraid of my fear and even more of the fear of others who do not know where they are going, who continue clinging to what they consider to be life, which we know to be death." The nature of our work reflects the deep divisions and injustices that surround and separate us. Planting seeds and holding up the light are vastly different realities than walking the cold corridors of death. I want to plant seeds. I do not want to walk the dark and cold corridors of death leading to life. But somehow I believe that many of us must learn to walk at least some of those dark and cold corridors if reimagining is ever to move from being an elite celebration of human diversity into a revolutionary movement for social, political, and ecclesiastical transformation. Reimagining is not just about rejoicing in human difference, experiencing inclusive liturgies, listening to visionary theological voices, and building isolated, removed pockets of human community. Reimagining is about building a world where the elite and the privileged must face their own complicity in the oppression of others, oppression that is constant and daily and death-dealing. Reimagining is about building a world where the poor and the powerless and the marginalized seize the power to shape their own destinies, where there is land to farm and water to drink and food to eat and work that is meaningful for all, and the possibility of health care for all people exists. Water must flow more easily and fully because we have been here. Wine must pour forth more equitably because we have been here, and milk must flow to the ends of the earth. To do this work, we must be able to imagine what is possible. We must be willing to move into the fear of human difference, be willing to face the claims that will be made upon our voices, our writing, our resources, our time, our safety, our money, our lives. Human beings who know what is truly possible and are willing to live that possibility teach us how to do the same. The end of September, I went to Los Angeles for an urban immersion experience with other colleagues from around the country who are a part of the Association of Practical Theology. The entire weekend was a stretching and challenging one, but one encounter remains in my mind in a very distinct way. Here we sat, 15 practical theologians who somewhat pride ourselves in the fact that we work very hard to bring theory and practice together in theological education in order to equip people for an effective and relevant ministry in the world. Sitting as a part of our circle are Veronica and Vicky. They are social workers who walk the streets of LA on a daily basis, searching for, seeking out, looking for women who are at high risk for contracting AIDS. Earlier in their lives, they both have been drug users, they tell us, and street dwellers. With absolute clarity, Vicky says, every 5 minutes someone is infected, every 15 minutes someone dies. AIDS is not a moral issue, AIDS is a health issue. The two women describe their work with passion and profound integrity. At one point, Vicky says, each day we go in pairs, we put on our badges, we pick up our outreach bags filled with condoms and bleach to clean needles, and we go looking for women. After some time, one of our group, who could stand it no longer, said, where I teach and where I live my life, how people contract AIDS would certainly be a moral issue. Would you say more? Vicky simply replied, AIDS is not a moral issue, it is a health issue. Frustrated and somewhat angry, the man in our group came back two more times until Vicky said, if you feel the need to dwell on the moral question and to debate the issue, that is where you must be. For us, AIDS is not a moral issue, it is a health issue. I couldn't help but realize in that moment that I talk about life, but here are two women who are absolutely compelled to save it. There's a vast difference between planting seeds and walking dark, cold corridors, between academic discussions and outreach bags of condoms and bleach. Transformational work is not about standing still and defending ourselves against the evil that surrounds us, but it is a movement into it and through it with speech and presence and action. It is about gathering up our outreach bags with whatever it takes to get the job done. It is work that places our lives in fundamentally new places, sometimes positioning our passions and our bodies in places that feel like and bring about death. In our worship book, reimagining is described as that which sustains our common vocation and transformation. Many are the dimensions of this struggle. Doing what must be done, what is possible to do, is a courageous act. This endless work is a dance of fire, passion, and persistence. For some of us, it is a literal dance. For others, a slow but steady walk. For others of us, it will be a dance done from wheelchairs and hospital beds, with cane in hand and with faltering step. But it will be done. Sylvia Dunston reminded us in the hymn we sang only moments ago that we are sojourners and pilgrims who share a winding way and whose hope burns through the terror. It is the hope and terror of shaping a world where we understand with absolute clarity that as we reimagine God, Jesus, church, worshiping community, sexuality, work, ethics, art, ministry, we are in fact imagining our way into a world where the bodies of our daughters, our mothers, our sisters, our lovers will be cherished, where women, children, men will preserve the earth and live reverently with all its creatures, where cultural differences will be respected and protected, and ethnic heritage honored, where women will be able to embrace each other as lovers, feeling beautiful and unafraid, where the world's hungry will have enough to eat, where people with disabilities will have equal and total access to buildings, to work, to sexuality, to relational dignity, where the young will be valued for their wisdom and their innocence, and the old will be treasured for their passion and their guidance. It is a winding way. It is a way filled with hope, burning through the terror. As the water and wine and milk of our work flows forth, there will be no more begging. No more Guatemalan children begging. No more Canaanite women begging. No more crumbs and no more begging. Sweet honey in the rock, sing the preamble to the Constitution of the United Mine Workers. Perhaps a fitting preamble to the work that faces us ahead. Step by step, the longest march can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly none, singly none. And by union, what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill, singly none, singly none. Drop by drop, step by step, and as we go, this unnamed Canaanite woman winds the road with us and shouts for us to do our work with urgency and passion. Amen.